That frequency is what you're picking up when you tune that radio.
Very impressive.
You can sit on the moon and it looks like they pick up CKOT clear as a bell.
Fascinating. Your analysis seems logical.
CKOT is on the air.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? I'm brought to you live.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Off the Hour, right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. We are 23 days into the month of March. We are broadcasting from unceded Mohawk and Anishinaabe territory. You are tuned into The Avalanche, a special presentation of CKUT's Community News Department. The Avalanche seeks to cover issues affecting those with disabilities. I'm your host, Zoe. On today's show, an interview with Laure Vadrielle, who is just named a spokesperson for the Quebec Intellectual Disability Week by the Quebec Intellectual Disability Society. Also, details on CKUT's 2022 funding drive. All that and more right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. You are listening to The Avalanche, where all abilities are welcome. If you'd like to get involved, you can call 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or email news at ckut.ca. You can also follow us on Twitter at @avalancheckut. Welcome back to The Avalanche on CKUT 90.3 FM. Before we begin our show, some messages.
Are you a tenant in Montreal? Do you have questions about your rights? Your local housing committee can help. To find the housing committee for your neighborhood or for more resources, go to www.rclalq.qc.ca.
My name is Alice Wu, and here are some of the recent headlines.
Quebec's National Assembly passed Bill 96 on Wednesday. This far-reaching bill contains more than 200 clauses and significantly strengthens Quebec's French language charter. And as of Tuesday, there are 15 confirmed cases of monkeypox in Quebec, up from 5 cases on Friday. The virus is mainly transmitted by close contact and respiratory droplets. Montreal's public health director, Milan Drouin, says housemates or sexual partners of infected individuals are most at risk. And at least 10 people died in the aftermath of a storm that swept across Quebec and southern Ontario on Saturday. 500,000 Quebecers lost power, but Montreal was largely spared. And Montreal ended its COVID-19 state of emergency last Thursday. The city pointed to high vaccination rates and fewer COVID cases as reasons behind this decision.
and Quebec coroner Jeanne Kamel released a critical report on the state of long-term care homes during the first wave of the pandemic. Kamel says the province did not give enough attention to long-term care facilities and that the provincial healthcare system was already slow and disorganized. She says this contributed to 53 COVID-19-related deaths. 47 were at CHSLD Heron, a private care home in the Montreal area.
Back to the Avalanche, right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Today we have a very special episode. Ongoing this week is our 2022 funding drive. If you want to support radio produced by and for the Montreal disability community, please consider donating to the Avalanche during this year's CKUT funding drive. Just before the 2020 funding drive was supposed to begin, CKUT made the difficult yet necessary decision to close our offices and broadcasting studios and effectively cancel our annual funding drive. When we did, our rescheduled drive last spring, our community came together and went far beyond our fundraising goal of $25,000 for nearly $37,000. We've learned a lot over the last 2 years about adaptation, helping each other, and what's important to our families and communities. CKUT has continued to be a beacon of frontline news throughout the pandemic, as well as for music and cultural programming that has helped alleviate the stress associated with isolation, illness, and changes in our lives. We have been resilient. This year, we chose to choose a theme that celebrates this resilience. The station and CKUT community have weathered many storms over the years, and the pandemic has proved our utmost resilience. We've made it thus far against all odds. Let's keep fighting for the power of community radio till infinity. So what would your donation be helping? CKUT's programming runs 24/7, and we have to pay for the rental of our transmitter site for all those hours we're on air. We continually have to repair and replace our equipment and embrace new technology that will enhance our programming. Therefore, it's really expensive to maintain a radio station. CKUT receives no corporate funding, which is great because it means that the station is not controlled or influenced by commercial interests in any way. Station revenue continues to come from membership fees or annual funding drive and from advertising that we do for local and grassroots initiatives. All of the programming you hear on CKUT is produced by volunteer community members of all ages from all walks of life. CKUT ensures that the voices of the marginalized will always be heard and nurtures an incredible diversity of programming that serves a multitude of communities across Montreal. CKUT is also a place of experimentation. Programmers and contributors create an eclectic and wildly creative mix of programming. Listening to and celebrating programming on CKUT will take your imagination to new places. CKUT also avidly supports social equity and a spirit of inclusiveness and cooperation by reaching out and offering a voice to the concerns of marginalized citizens and groups. One of the main functions of the station is to provide access to the skills, techniques, and equipment necessary for radio broadcasting. By supporting CKUT, you're securing a spot on the FM dial that is truly representative of the wonderfully creative and diverse city of Montreal. So, how are you able to donate? You can donate online at ckut.ca/donate or funding.ckut.ca. If you prefer to donate by phone, you can call 514-907-9424. There are a lot of different prizes available, including totes, tees, and more. Those who donate $30 or more also get a chance to win from the prizes listed on the website. Such prizes include tickets, gift cards, and more. Again, if you would like to donate to CKUT's 2022 funding drive, you can make a donation at funding.ckut.ca. Or you can also call them in at 514-907-9424. Up now is an interview with Laure Vadrial. She was just named the spokesperson of the Quebec Intellectual Disability Week by the Quebec Intellectual Disability Society. So welcome to the show, Laure. Could you tell us a bit about yourself and what you do?
Yes, hello, thank you for inviting me. So I'm Laure Vadrial. I mean, in life, I'm an eco-sociologist and I work a lot on environmental issues. Some people might have heard of Équiterre that I co-founded many years ago. I'm at the Institut des sciences de l'environnement at LUCAM, and I'm in the activist movement, very involved with the Mère au Front. But for this week, I'm also the co-spokesperson of the Semaine de Sensibilisation sur la Déficience Intellectuelle that is organized by the SQDI, la Société Québécoise de la Déficience Intellectuelle.
So, as you just mentioned, you were just named as spokesperson for the Quebec Intellectual Disability Week by the Quebec Intellectual Disability Society. And would you, first of all, congratulations. That's a big achievement. And I feel like you add a lot to the movement. Would you be able to tell us a bit about your involvement with the organization?
Well, I just started getting involved with them because they mm-hmm. asked me to be the co-spokesperson. I'm more known to talk about biodiversity than neurodiversity. But actually, there's a lot of parallel that need to be made. And I accepted this role also because I am the mother of Alfie, who has special needs and who was born with an orphan disease, the syndrome Smith-Lemli-Opitz, that among the different consequences gives her different cognitive challenges. So she's been teaching me a lot of things about life since she was born 17 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And what's it like being honored with this role?
You know, when there's something, we talk about that when there's, you know, someone that apparently you kind of might be scared, and then you realize that then it can become the relation kind of change. So for me, first, when Alfie was born, we had a lot of worries because she lacked a lot of tonus, physical tonus, but also cognitive tonus. And I must say that one of the things that I was most afraid of as a mother was that she would have cognitive challenges. The cognitive abilities that you have can open your mind so much and give you access to so many beautiful things that I was very scared of that. And I realized that I had myself some prejudice, and society has very strong negative prejudice against that, you know, to the point that even we propose to mother to get an abortion when you can see on the echography that some disability might be present. So it's to say how deep into society this prejudice is. Mm-hmm. So having to be confronted with that when she was born, I had all those worry about how her life would be, because we know life is challenging even when you have all your ability when you're confronted to that. So as a mother, I was very, very worried. But little by little, I got to know Alfie, to discover Alfie for what she was. Because at the beginning, I was trying to imagine her like without that little gene that made her so special and so challenging. Mm-hmm. But then I realized that I shouldn't do that because I loved Alfie so much, the way she was, in fact, and that if she didn't have this little gene, she wouldn't be the same person. And mm-hmm. and I loved her for what she was. And when I started, when I kind of realized that, and especially when I started stopping to compare, because I think that comparison is like the worst thing in general, not only, you know, for when you have kids that have special needs, but just in general, because mm-hmm. comparison often makes, you know, brings you in kind of a competition and that's, you know, society is so much driven by that model. And I think it's very destructive. And I experimented even as a mother, because when you go to the first appointment with the doctors and that they're investigating, they're always investigating what's wrong rather than putting mm-hmm. the light on what's right and what goes well and all the forces. And that's what I've to see with Alfie, how courageous she was, how much, in French we say perseverance, you know, like she would mm-hmm. do something again and again and again, even if it was so difficult for her. So she became such a model for me, and also because she needs more time to do just about everything. You know, we live in a world that everything goes just so fast and that we don't see the life passing by. Whereas being with Alfie, you know, slow you down and help you to see all the beauty around you. So now I think that we should value this neurodiversity the same way that we now value biodiversity, because now we've learned that all species have a role to play mm-hmm. and are important in the relation. I think that now society has to move on and realize that all those people that are neuroatypic have something to bring to society and will help us to be more resilient, will help us to find new solution, new way to see the world and new way to live on that planet.
And how did you get into specifically disability rights advocacy? So you described a bit about the process of your daughter being born, but how did you decide that you wanted to be an active public spokesperson?
Well, because there's so much that needs to be advocate for. It's amazing. I don't see if in the last weeks you've seen in La Presse some investigation that have been done for people that are neuroatypic, that are under the protection of the government, under curatelle, we say in French, and that are totally abandoned, that people that end up being homeless. The system is just so unfair with them. I mean, those that have a family and people around them to take care of them are better off. But, you know, what makes me scared also is that, you know, what happens when I die? You know, if our society is not more solidaire, is more helping each other, what will happen even to my daughter? So of course I'm building around her a security net, a community net. She has a brother and there's a strong network. It's not all the people that have this luck of being born in a family that do have resources and capacity to build this net. And that's why it's the entire society that has to be more, you know, helping each other and more solidaire to support those people that have special needs. And we're all going to be better off with that because we realize that in society there's more solidarity, there's more happiness too, because it makes us being better humans at the end.
Mm-hmm. You're an accomplished activist in the environmental sphere. How did your skills in eco-advocacy translate into your work as a disability rights advocate?
As I mentioned, I'm just starting in this world, but I think it's true that there's a lot of similarity in the sense that we need to meet with politicians, we need to convince, we need to do a lot of education because we realize that a lot of prejudice are in fact very connected to the fact that we don't understand well the issue and we don't make the proper decision that will protect the environment, the same thing that we need to protect people that are more vulnerable in our society. So I think there's a lot of raising awareness that is necessary, and there's a big need also of having concrete demands to respond to that. Okay, what does it mean to take care of them, you know, from when they're very, very small and then when they're elderly? And also the challenges is that the reality of those people vary, and thus the needs vary very much from one person to another, and also depends on the family. But you have people that are very severe cognitive challenges that are not even able to speak, and even less to write or things like that, and other to the opposite that are able to have a fairly autonomous life but just need frame to secure them and make sure that, you know, they respond to their need and that they are safe. Because what happens very often is that there's people that take advantage of them, and that's why we need to have kind of a solidarity and security net for them.
Mm-hmm. So in 2012, you and your daughter were featured in the documentary El Fey of the Stars. Could you tell us a bit about this project?
That's a documentary that has been made by NFP and her father, Hugo Latulippe, who made it. We were going to live in Switzerland for 2 years. Switzerland is a country where I was born and where part of my family is. And because my parents moved to Quebec when I was only 2 years old, so I never had the chance to really live there. So we thought, okay, let's do that. So I went to do my PhD in Geneva, and we went back to the village where I was born, and Alfie and her big brother Colin, who is 2 years older than her, started school there. And it's funny because they were in the same buildings that my brother and sisters and even my dad and granddad had been to school. It was the beginning of the integration of Alfie in the school system, and it went very, very well. So this documentary is telling that story and present part of the needs that Alfie has and the need for us to slow down, take time with her.
And how did the filming of the project impact you?
That's a big question. It has been a family challenge, especially for Colin, that Colin at many occasions feel kind of a push on the side and not very present in the documentary, which I find is really a pity. So that influenced very negatively our family, I would say, but that's not Alfie's fault and that's not Colin's fault.
And could you describe more about the gendered element of parenting, especially a child with disabilities?
It needs more time, more presence. Like when Alfie was a baby, there's a lot of appointments at the hospital. And then there were a lot of appointments for physiotherapy, ergotherapy, orthophony. Then there's all the things you need to go to do at home to stimulate her, to help her. And you really need, I think, to be perseverant, because you don't see necessarily the progress very easily. It takes time. It takes like a lot more energy. And all those things that you do with your kids are going to be rewarded, but you might not concretely see it, but it's worth it. At least that's what I've noticed for Alfie. And it's funny now with that role that I have as a spokesperson, some people that have been with Alfie when she was a baby, and I'm thinking about a message I received from a musicotherapist that she wrote to me and said, you know, at the beginning when I was with Alfie, I was very discouraged because I didn't see any progress. And she was used to work more with kids that are neurotypical. Mm-hmm. And so she really had to also work on her own strategy and way of doing things, because she could have said, she said she was just about to say, you know, it's not worth it to do something. And I think that we need to prevent this kind of abandonment, because it does happen. And if we abandon them, then we don't give them the chance to develop their full potential. And mm-hmm. that's very, very important. And that's why our health system, our education system needs to put more resources. So even if you don't see the progress as easily as with other kids, there is some progress, and it does make all the differences for the person later on in their life. And but it's a society choice, and I think we need to make that choice.
And how did the filming of the project specifically impact your thoughts around your child's disability?
Well, the filming didn't have such an impact. It's more my life with Alfie, that everyday life with her, that had an impact. And the joy that you have when you celebrate every little victory. And I think that's important. And to put the light on the beauty of each little thing. And you know, in many ways, and that's my experience with Alfie that brought me down, but sometimes I look at Alfie and how she has a very different way to be in this world. And sometimes, you know, she puts me, and I think like many people that have cognitive challenges, they kind of put us out of our comfort zone. Mm-hmm. But it's precisely when we're out of our comfort zone that we become creative, that we start to think outside the box, that we see the world with new eyes. And I think that's so important, mm-hmm. to be able to be in that kind of state, to see all the beauty. You know, it's a bit like sometimes you go to see like contemporary art exhibit, and there's things you don't understand or that makes you uncomfortable, and it's just like later on that you catch on and that you feel something. And I think that mm-hmm. it's that having the privilege to live with Alfie is all those opportunity to, yes, sometimes be tired, because it asks a lot of attention, it asks a lot of love, but it gives so much. That's why my view on cognitive challenges has completely changed having the chance to live with Alfie.
And you're also a founder of Mère Offrant. Would you be able to tell us a bit about this project?
Yeah, with joy. Actually, Mère au Front, it's a movement that started a bit more than 2 years ago. It's mm-hmm. my friend Anaïs Barbeau-Lavalette that some of you might know for her novel. She recently wrote Femme Forêt. She also did many films. And she contacted me and she was very discouraged about the state of the environment and worried about her kids. And when we met, I was as worried and as sad as her because I'd been working on environmental issues for many, many years. And I was seeing the, you know, how governmental decision, as much as the federal, as the provincial level were not, and worldwide, were not doing enough, and how they were ignoring sciences, they were ignoring, you know, also all the solutions that exist that we could put in place to protect the future of our kids. So we kind of meet each other and I said, you know, what will we have to do? Will we have to get... in French, we say immolé, like put ourselves in fire so that they realize that the challenge is there and that we need to do something urgently. So we were both very anxious and sad. And then we said, well, we were kind of brainstorming and say, and she's more of an artist and I'm an activist, but I also have a scientific background on having a PhD in environmental issues and ecological transition. Mm-hmm. So we said, okay, so what is universal? What is the thing that people across religion, culture, age, level of education, level of revenues, you know, from all walks of life, what is the most important to protect that we all agree with? And typically, it's kids, you know. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to protect kids and everybody loves their kids. You know, if you have the image of a polar bear, most people or a lot of people will don't feel concerned about the polar bear. But if they think about the future of their own kids or their nephews, their niece or their neighbor that have, you know, all the kids, all those pictures, you know, we want to protect them. We don't want harms to them. Yet the decision that we're making today are concretely destroying our future. So we're going to unite around this identity that we have as mother. So united mothers from all walk of talk, and we're going to put pressure on government to walk the talk and to really put in place concrete solutions. So we had that idea that was before COVID, mm-hmm. and we were planning in May to organize a big meeting in Ottawa because we really thought that it's federal decision about hydrocarbons, so about petroleum and gas and oil that we need to change. So we were planning to do this big action. And then there was the COVID, so it had to be canceled. But what happened that is really fantastic is that all those mothers wanted to get involved and still wanted to do something, even mm-hmm. if we couldn't do the big event. So now there's about 30 groups of mothers, the mm-hmm. Mères au Front, and we've also made great connections for our kids. That is an organization that have the same mission as Mères au Front, but that are all across Canada mm-hmm. and that are working more in English. So we collaborate on different actions, them in English and us more in French. So there are groups of Mères au Front in BC, in Nova Scotia, in New Brunswick, in Ontario. And there's also groups of for our kids in Montreal. Mm-hmm. So we love working together.
And it seems like the project is like the most wonderful kind of combination of combining your experiences with motherhood and your experience as a climate change activist. What was that experience like? Like, how did you decide this is the perfect way for me to contribute my skills?
After I've been trying to change things a lot more by kind of talking to people with their heads, like having mm-hmm. scientific arguments and demonstration and with, you know, kind of the rationals, I realized that it's not what makes people move. In fact, if you want mm-hmm. to have people change, it's much more when you touch the heart yeah. of people that they will feel, okay, yes, I feel like doing something, because there is a natural resistance to change in general. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to address this by talking more to the heart and making people realize how, you know, it has emotional consequences also not to act to protect the future of our kids. And I think that's why now there's so many mothers and even like people that are not mothers, a lot of women and that have no kids and that are very involved in the movement and playing a role extremely important. Often also their involvement is crucial because since they don't have kids, you know, to take care, they sometimes have more times and capability to be free to organize things that, you know, when you have three young kids, it's like at supper time, it's kind of challenging and you don't have the same freedom. Whereas they're very involved and really wonderful. And a lot of also the retired mothers. And that's also something that I didn't expect it, but the intergenerational connection. So we have young mothers, daughters involved, and we have grandmothers and even great grandmothers that are involved. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful movement, and that I find is very efficient too, because we do manage, because we represent the population in general, there's something universal in that. And when we ask meetings with ministers, with deputy, we manage to have meetings and we have their ear, and very often they feel very touched by the stories of mothers saying that their kids say that they don't want to have kids, for example, or that their kids are eco-anxious, or that their kids are worried about their futures, all those situations.
Mm-hmm. And you've talked about your experiences as a parent and how that translates into advocacy for both disability rights and against climate change. But I was wondering if you'd be able to speak a bit about the role of siblings in advocacy.
Oh, I love that. And more than in advocacy, I would say the role of siblings in the happiness and well-being of kids and later on adults that live with cognitive challenges. And when I think, for example, of Colin, the big brother of Alfie, he played such an important role in Alfie's life. And I'm pretty convinced, because in the case of Alfie, and one of the challenges that is very present normally with syndrome Smith-Lemli-Opitz, what she has is severe case of autism. And I saw when Alfie was a little baby how it's her brother that managed to give her an interest in the world, that give her the interest of connecting with the world here. It's with him that she first made eye connection. It's with him that she first smiled, was doing all sorts of things that made her laugh and be happy. And he challenged her to surpass herself, and later on he challenged her in, you know, developing her self defense mechanism also, because like any big brother would do. And I think that's very marvelous. And at the same time, when I look at Colin, he had to give up quite a bit of his parents because Alfie needed more time and attention. I mean, I was very often gone at the hospital with Alfie, or as normally I would be with him. I was doing, you know, therapy with Alfie. I was doing all sorts of things. So he had to learn to share even more than a normal brother would in normal circumstances. So, and I had a discussion with him last week about that, you know, because I know that sometimes it was kind of jealous and very, very small. I remember one time he said that he would have loved to have that syndrome him too, so that we would take care of him as much. He said that, I think it was just like when the film was coming out, that he cried and he said that. And of course, now that 19, he doesn't see that way, but I can understand how sad and how difficult it has been for him at some other times. But now when you reflect about that, now he said that having Alfie in his life made him a better human and made him be more sensitive to any vulnerability of people. And he's very, very, very high emotional intelligence, Colin. Mm-hmm. Kind of perceive people and is very kind of open. And I think that it's something like those are qualities that help him develop. Actually, that's what he said in himself. Yes, of course, a person in your family that has cognitive challenges implies a lot of challenges for everybody. But at the same time, all those challenges are just, you know, equal opportunity to make this world better and to open up our heart and our vision and bring more happiness into this world.
Mm-hmm. And you've talked a lot about kind of resistance to change. So you mentioned it in your work as a climate activist and in your work speaking about disability. So what would you recommend that society needs to change, and how do you think we should do it?
Well, I think we need to have more compassion in our society. And in French, we say bienveillance also. So we need to care more about each other and care more about the environment and ultimately care more about life itself, to protect it in all the form that it expressed it, you know, in the ecosystem and in our society. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you actually, I think that in both cases, we need a switch of paradigm. We need a change of paradigm in terms of what we value. And we are in a society that value a lot consumption, that value speeds, productivity, efficiency, that, you know, we have that kind of over and over and more. And I mean, when you're with someone like Alfie, you go back to the essential. What really counts? What is the most important?
Yeah.
And I think that's what we need to do, to reflect on the system that in many ways squash people and the environment the same way. It's the same mechanism of prioritizing the economy, but in a very narrow way. And it's all the capitalist system, whereas we need to change the system that is creating all this destruction. And we need to create a system that takes care about life, that takes care of each other. Because we're at the stage of life on Earth, the way we know it now, is clearly challenges. And we need new ways of living on this planet at another rhythm.
Mm-hmm. And you've talked a bit about how specifically kind of there's this culture of individualism as well. And through your experiences that you've shared on the show so far, you've talked a lot about how just basic compassion and living as part of a group versus, again, an individual kind of helps us further our development, both as humans and as genuine souls and good people. So how would you suggest that if people wanted to make that change and start thinking more as a whole rather than individual, how would someone go about that?
Each person has its own path, but for me, one possibility is to open up to connection, to relations, because we are in a world where everything is cut, where the links very often cut between us and the environment, between us and other people in society, because we're all in our silo, separated, you know, by many, many things and a system that wants to go fast and be productive. But the occasion you have to connect to nature, for example, to just, you know, take a simple breath, and you realize that the air you just inspired got in your lung, I mean, it went through other livings before you. It connects you to trees. It connects you to the sea that made the oxygen, that the blood, if you just, you know, close your eyes and you think about, you know, the blood and your body, I mean, it's 60% water. Well, this water was part of the oceans, has been in a cloud, has been in a little stream, has been in a flower, has been in a, you know, in a lion somewhere, that we're all connected with the ecosystem, but we're also all connected to each other. And you know how improbable it is that you and me are just talking right now. You know, think about all the encounter before that were needed so that you are the person you are. You know, first your parents met and made love at this time, and that this sperm and this ovule kind of connected and it gave you. But behind that, all the other meeting of men and women. Like there's the, you know, billions of events that could have been produced and could have been more likely that we're not there than we are there. So I think that celebrating the fact that you, we, each of us exist the way we are with each of us, you know, any kind of challenges we all have, because we all, you know, neuroatypical in one way or another, or will be in our life in certain circumstances. But just to celebrate the fact we exist, I think it's really, really wonderful and very, very important to do. And it makes life much more beautiful, and it empowers us really, because we live at a moment of human history that we can make a difference between the kind of future that we will give to our kids, but even the kind of future we will have. And things that we were worried about, you know, when I started getting involved in environment that we thought would arrive, like when I would be dead, like in 2100, it's happening already now. It's amazing. So climate change, a loss of biodiversity, is happening much more quickly. And with that, also more risk of political conflict, more tension around energy resource, more tension around food, water, and all this. So we now have the power to make this society better for the environment and for each other. And it starts now with all the choices we make, because all the choices, you know, political choices, of course, but also like day-to-day choices that going to get involved in movement, advocating for a better world. I think that we need to realize that each of us have a lot more power than we would think to, you know, have an impact around us.
And talking about climate change and specifically disability, how does climate change impact people with disabilities?
I'm really glad you raised this question, because those people are a lot more vulnerable than others. Of course, even like when you look at data during the in Montreal 3 summers ago, when you look at people that died, a lot of people were first economically vulnerable. There are people that were living in neighborhoods where there's more low chaleur, so eating more concrete, less trees and all this. But some people that had also cognitive challenges and that didn't know how to protect themselves. And that's the problem with climate change. When there's crisis, if those people are not well surrounded and are not in places where they will be protected, they might not be in a position to make the good decision to protect themselves from the heat, from the cold, from much water, or things like that. So that's an important point, and that's also part of my worryness.
How would people be able to kind of combine the aspects of climate activism and disability activism?
I think about Sébastien Jodouin, who is professor at the Faculty of Law at McGill, that is really someone I love and has done researches on both, and that see a lot of points. But globally, you know, as in society in general, we treat issues like in little silo, again, little separate parts, rather than looking at the solution and the world in more complexity and finding ways to address issues that are very similar. Because as I said, it's the system itself that needs to be challenged and transformed to make it, to bring it, you know, the respect, the limit of the limits of the ecosystem, but also the human limits of certain person, and respect and love and care more about everybody in there, not only the rich, not to protect just the rich, the powerful, the healthy, the strong, but the people that need more protection. And we need to reflect about the allocation of resources in that sense.
Mm-hmm. So back to the honor of the week. So Quebec Intellectual Disability Week takes place from March 20th to 27th. What are some of the other things that are planned for this week?
Well, since when they were planning that week, there was the COVID very present. So a lot of things are happening in on the web. For example, you can listen to podcasts. They're unfortunately in French. But I really invite you, if you have people in your family that live with cognitive challenges or neurodiversity, to make the effort to do something special with that person and to try to put yourself in his or her position. So getting to understand better the situation is one element, and then to become yourself an advocate for more equality and more inclusion can support some nonprofit organization that help train and integrate people in some jobs or mm-hmm. some activities. That's a different opportunity just that that you have. But I would say more generally, just to open up your vision and your heart to this, and then try to be consequent in the kind of decision in day-to-day life that you can make that will connect those issues.
And what are you specifically doing for the week?
I'm talking a lot about it.
Yeah.
On radio and television. Well, every day I kind of take care, nurture mm-hmm. my relation with Alfie, and all the opportunity I have also to talk to decision makers about the need to take into account those people are, I'm taking it. I'm also going to write a blog about an organization that I like a lot called Plein Rayon that is in Cowansville. That is an organization that is working both in integration and also on some environmental issues, because they are in a circular economy. For example, they will recuperate pieces of wood that would be thrown out normally, and they make a bird's little house for some species that needs more protection. And the people that make those little bird house are people that have cognitive challenges. It's a very beautiful organization, community organization. So that's one thing that I think that needs to be support a lot.
And if listeners wanted to know more about you and your projects, where can they go?
Good question. Well, there's, of course, the website of the SQDI. So it's SQDI.cca. There's also the organization trisomy.qc.ca that does organize the different activities this the week. Otherwise, about Mère au Front, you can go on the website Mère au Front. And I mean, there's Equiterre that, although I'm not working with them directly now, it's still an organization that I co-funded and that I still believe strongly about. So I would really encourage you to get mm-hmm. informed and get involved in any way you can, by little things and mm-hmm. bigger things. And getting involved bring a lot of happiness. I think we don't say it enough, but it makes you being part of the solution, although there's not one magic button on which we can press. But just making those relationships with each other and working on solution is very key at this stage of human history.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for giving us this space to talk and exchange. Mm-hmm. I think it's important.
Thank you, because this was fantastic. And you're very informed about a lot of different topics. And I can tell the love you have for your children.
Open the door. Seek new world. In here, Security 90.3 FM from Montreal.
Suoni Perilpopolo is back, and in real life for its 22nd edition. All the sights, sounds, and sensations of live music. After 2 years of online adaptation, Suoni is filling up the month of June with liberated music of all genres. Over 45 events and 90 participating artists performing indoors, outdoors, streamed for maximum accessibility. record and book launches, workshops, a puppet show, a satellite Sony happening in Wakefield, Quebec, of all places, and, of course, much more. For all the goodies, check out sonyparopopolo.org. Masks will, of course, be required. For your audio program guide, tune into the Montreal Sessions, Tuesday, May 24th, May 31st, and June 7 and 14th, from 3 till 5 p.m. The Swanee crew hosts will be serving up highlights of what to expect at this year's festival. This is, of course, a CKUT co-presentation.
The Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have two phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviere de Prairie Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing
on.
There is this thing going on.
What?
Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news I've brought to you live.
Welcome back to The Avalanche on CKT 90.3 FM. That completes this episode of The Avalanche, a special edition of Off the Hour, airing every Wednesday from 5 to 6. To stay up to date with Avalanche news, check out our Twitter, at AvalancheCKUT. Thank yous are due to all those who make educational and inspirational radio here at CKUT possible. If you would like to know more information on anything you heard tonight, or would like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact The Avalanche at avalancheckut.ca or CKUT's Spoken Word Department at spokenword@ckut.ca. Stay tuned for Hearsay. That's up next. We'll be right back.
following is a previously broadcast program.
CKUT Radio, Community Radio. CKUT.CAO. CKUT. 90.3 FM, Montreal.
You're listening to In the Motherhood here on CKUT 90.3 FM. It's May 18th, just a bit past 6 p.m., and I'm your host for today, Robin Fadden. We have two pieces of content today on In the Motherhood, and the first half is an interview I just did with the author and journalist Tara Schwartz about her new book, Can't Help Falling, A Long Road to Motherhood, and it's a memoir. It was recently published by Linda Leith Publishing here in Montreal, and I'll put that link on our Facebook page, the CKUT-In the Motherhood Facebook page. In this memoir, Tara recounts her unexpected emotional and inspiring journey to motherhood, as the book title implies. She was a longtime news reporter and spent years working in front of the television camera, of course, and telling other people's stories, and this time she is telling her own. I'll get into that interview right now. Thanks for listening to CKUT. Hi, Tara. Welcome to In the Motherhood. It's really great to talk to you.
Hello, Robin. Thank you so much for having me on.
Your book, Can't Help Falling, A Long Road to Motherhood, tells your story with such raw emotion and compassion for yourself and your family, your husband,